you're conditioned and you're programmed from a young age, right?
Yeah.
To always be successful and to get the next thing and to be promoted is good.
Right.
And you want to keep doing it and you make more money and more money is better.
Yeah.
But then I just realized that I had all the money I wanted. Mm-hmm. Not that I had a ton, but I had all that I wanted.
Mm-hmm.
And the more I got, I wasn't happier.
Yeah.
I wasn't unhappy,
but
it didn't give me fulfillment that I thought I would have with it.
Hello, everyone. This is Daliana. Today, I'm interviewing my friend Misty from her farm in a small town in Portugal. Before moving here, she had a successful career in finance after working over 20 years in the industry. In 2019, she surprised everyone by quitting her job as a finance director. She bought a farm and said goodbye to corporate life forever. Over the past month, I've been living in her farm with her dogs, cats, and goats, eating her farm-grown vegetables and fruits. She even showed me how to pave her driveway using gravels. She made this lifestyle change in 2019. Before most people started to reevaluate their work life during the pandemic. So in my book, her decision to commit to the change is both brave and inspiring. Today, I'm very excited to share her story with you, and she's ready to tell us everything about her experience moving from the busy corporate life to the farm life. And she's ready to tell us everything about her experience moving from the busy corporate life to the farm life, where she does a lot of manual work these days. Does she find it boring? Does she regret it? And what's her best advice to other people who also want to explore a different path outside of the modern city life? Welcome to my podcast, Misty.
Thank you.
So when you first told your manager about quitting your job, what was their reaction?
I think that they were surprised, but my direct boss was very supportive of it, partly because she was about to retire herself and she was just like, go for it, go get it.
Yeah.
And yeah. And then my other bosses, I think, were surprised, shocked, I guess, but also supportive.
Yeah. So what made you finally decide to quit your job and move to a farm? Was there a defining moment?
Was there a defining moment? Yes, but I didn't just quit my job and move to a farm. So I quit my job and I didn't know what I wanted to do. I just knew that what I was doing wasn't fulfilling for me anymore and had no idea, actually. I decided to travel for a while and just do some adventure travel and have a lot of different experiences and hope that I could figure out, you know, what I wanted to do when I grew up. And and I did. I Googled, what do you do when you're 40 and you don't know what you want to do? So, and I, and all like different variations of that because I had just had no idea and it was scary, right? I had achieved everything that I thought I wanted in life and all my goals. I was successful. I had, you know, what I thought was a really good amount of money that I was making. And I had friends. I had a good boyfriend. I was living in a cool city, Seattle, you know. But it wasn't enough. It felt empty. And so I knew that I wanted to make a change. But it's scary, right? If you don't know what you're stepping into. It's very much a leap of faith and just kind of taking a step into the abyss and hoping there's something that will catch you when you're there.
Yeah.
And then, but also knowing that, you know, worst case scenario, I could go back.
Yeah. So I think having that two-way door, the decision, knowing you have the skill set, you have the decision that you can always go back, make you feel safe when you're taking a little bit of a risk.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, you know, in finance, I think it's a skill set that's very much in demand. And, you know, you don't have a whole lot of people just rolling out of college saying, oh, man, I want to be an accountant. So it makes a lot of job security. And yeah, so you can always do it again. My fear really was is that I had what, you know, it wasn't a perfect job, but it was a job that I enjoyed. And I worked for a company that, you know, was a big corporate company and that wasn't perfect, but, you know, was pretty good for companies of that size.
Yeah. So you wanted to make a change and there are so many different options. You could open a coffee shop. You can go teach English in the country. So out of all the different possibilities, What made you decide to start a farm life?
Yes. Yeah, I didn't finish the connection there. So I went and I traveled for, I don't know, about a year or two. So I started traveling at about, a year and a half into my travels, COVID hit, which is a bummer when you don't have a home. I didn't, I leased out my apartment in Seattle and all my belongings were in my backpack. And so I continued to travel a bit. I stopped for a while. I was stuck for a while in Spain and I continued to travel for a bit. And then I made it to Portugal. It was the next one of the few places on my list that I hadn't been that I wanted to go. And just as I was traveling around in Portugal, I realized that in all my travels and all my volunteer experiences and all my adventure that I had been on in the past, year or two, I really enjoyed life outside the big cities. I enjoyed life more in the countryside in small communities where people know each other. I found it just more fulfilling and more natural way to live. Mm-hmm. So it kind of just segued from that. And I like to grow things, love animals. And I just really enjoy being on a farm and having my hands in the dirt every day and growing things. It's super fulfilling.
Yeah. Yeah. I got a little bit taste of farm life. And
yes, you
I
did.
Have to say, yeah, doing some manual work, it feels different than going to the gym, work on the equipment, an actual workout. And then it is very fulfilling to see, actually pave the driveway. I'm eating the vegetable I grow myself. Feel more connected to nature.
Mm-hmm, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. I find that, a lot of people, so I also host volunteers. And when they come, it's like, they always want to, hey, I want to do something that I can see the effect of, when I leave. And so a lot of times I focus on that. But yeah, it's like we see, we had a huge pile of gravel one day. And then now we have this beautiful, picturesque countryside driveway that we created. Yeah, it's nice. It's like it's purposeful, right? Mm-hmm. Instead of just kind of being a hamster on a wheel every day and just kind of churning away and maybe getting your paycheck, you're actually creating something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So now what is your day-to-day like? So what is your schedule?
My schedule is, it varies so much day-to-day. But I would say that typically kind of what's constant is that in the morning when I get up, I take care of the animals first. Mm-hmm. So I have two dogs, I have two cats, and I have three sheep and two goats now. Mm. And it's not a lot, really, when you think about a farm. I mean, it's a lot for, if you have an apartment, right? But for a farm, it's not a ton, but they do keep me busy. So I get up, I have quick breakfast, I walk the dogs, I maybe move the sheep and the goats to a new area if it's necessary, and I check on them to make sure that they're okay and doing well.
Yeah. And you talked about you have volunteers come help you with some farm projects. How did you find volunteers?
I actually used a site called Workaway. And I used this site actually when I was traveling to find just unique, new, different volunteer experiences, because that was part of what I was doing. I was trying to figure out what I wanted to do, right? And so I did quite a lot of different things. Mm-hmm. And
sorry, so for people who are not familiar with Workaway, can you tell us a little bit what is it?
Yes, it just matches people up who are maybe travelers and want to travel more economically, and people who have projects, I would say, but it doesn't have to be a huge project. Yeah. It could just be, someone has some things to do around the house and they would like some help. And so it's an exchange. They host people who are traveling and then those travelers in turn help them do whatever they need to do, right? So the travelers get a free place to stay and a new country that they're traveling to. Mm-hmm. And they get usually, free food and perhaps, someone to show them around that area, which just from my experience doing it, I found it to be just a really more interesting way to travel.
Yeah.
And instead of being a tourist, you're spending a lot of money, right? But also you're just kind of having this very shallow experience in this country you're going to. But when you do a volunteer and you involve yourself into a small community, whether it's just those, a person or two that you're helping but they're locals, and you actually get to share in the daily life of those people and that community. And yeah, I found it's just a deeper dive, I guess, when you go and travel into knowing a country.
Yeah.
And a people.
So what was your favorite experience with the volunteers?
I've had so many for the volunteers that I've hosted here. You know, the cool thing about volunteers is there's, especially travelers in general, the people who are volunteering and traveling, you know, low budget with work away, are just adventurers, and they just have this really, in general, have this really good spirit that they bring to here, right? The farm, wherever they go. And just having new groups created. At one time, I had 6 or 7 volunteers from all over, you know, the world. And they helped me with the animal care. And then also we created a beautiful garden that's in the shape of a sun. And we had a bunch of different small things. We've got chickens while they were here. Mm-hmm. And just sharing that with people that are really cool is just a really nice experience. So some other bigger projects that we did is a lovely couple from Germany, mm-hmm. we installed a unique wood ceiling in one of the rooms in the back house.
Yeah.
And we reseeded some pasture area so that the sheep can have some nice grass to, mm-hmm. oat grass to munch on.
Yeah.
But yeah, a lot of little things like that. And in the future, I'm thinking about doing projects that are more kind of encapsulated projects, mm-hmm. because I think the more that I as a host can show people, like have like a encapsulated experience, like, we built this.
Yeah.
You know, I came here for 2 weeks and I built this, mm-hmm. I helped build this. It's quite nice.
Yeah. So now the viewers can see the background. It's the kitchen we have. Mm. I think maybe after the recording, I can probably use my phone to do a little bit vlog to show the folks what a farm actually looks like, to give people a taste of it.
Nice. It's a work in progress. So yeah. Keep expectations low.
So you mentioned there are volunteers come to help you with some work. I think another thing I see some people do is they will turn their farm or their house into Airbnb. So have you thought about commercialize it?
You know, I have thought about it, and a lot of people have suggested this to me, to mm-hmm. something to do. And sometimes not even just suggesting, it's just like, of course, what are you going to, where are you going to make your money, right? Mm-hmm. How are you supporting yourself?
Yeah.
You have this thing, this asset, how is it going to work for you? And I'm actually not. The more kind of in this phase of my life, I'm less concerned about making mm-hmm. money, as just living a natural life and not being, reducing my consumerism and not really needing to spend that much. So with this farm, I don't have very many fixed expenses, and I'm able to live a very economic life, and therefore that gives me freedom in that I don't have to really be a slave to an income, right?
Yeah.
To compromise what my passion is, mm-hmm. to make money just to support myself. So no, I actually, now I'm really looking more for, to reduce the role that money has in my life, to grow a lot of my own things, my fruits and vegetables, and then also create trade relationships with neighbors and friends in the area and just locals in the area. Mm. Because it is not just for the practical nature of it and that not spending the money, but also you create a community. And I think that's what one thing that I realized that in our modern life we miss is like money kind of is the root of all evil,
yeah.
right? It's like we create this money and we are a slave to it because it is a drug, right? Mm. You want more money because it can buy you more things, you need more, but we don't really need that more, right? Mm. And to the extent that we can get back into our communities and small communities and know our neighbors and help each other out, I think that our life can be a little more fulfilling and meaningful.
Yeah. And you mentioned a trade relationship with your neighbors or the community. What kind of trade relationships or what type of trade relationships you have already formed with them?
Yeah, I don't have that many, but it's more with friends. So I have my next door neighbor, mm-hmm. who the lady who lives next door to me is, she also likes to farm and garden. And we have a lot of similar interests. And mm-hmm. whenever she has extra tomatoes, extra vegetables, she brings them over to me. Mm-hmm. When I have extra, you know, pears or whatever in my orchard, mm-hmm. then I bring them over to her.
Yeah.
And which is nice, right? Those are things mm-hmm. that it makes it easier, right? You don't have to grow everything yourself.
Right.
You just have to grow the things that you enjoy, and then mm-hmm. maybe you trade with neighbors and friends for the other things.
Yeah.
And then another friend of mine, she also has a small but very productive garden. Mm-hmm. And she, you know, when she, after she enjoys creating plants, you know, starting plants, propagating mm-hmm. plants. And then she'll give the extras to me. And she also has this really great knowledge with about herbs and the natural cosmetics and medicines mm. that she's teaching me. So also trade isn't just with the trade I'm exploring isn't just with physical things mm-hmm. or things that you eat, but it's also with knowledge.
Yeah.
And I think I mentioned when we were talking earlier today, my neighbor has vineyards.
Yeah.
And I really would like to learn how to take care of vines, right? Yeah. Of grapevines. And so, and that's another, maybe a trade I might try to seek out here in the coming years. Maybe I help him, you know, with his orchard and taking mm-hmm. care of pruning or whatnot, the grapevines, and in exchange for just learning how to do it, right?
Yeah. And so next time when I visit, I'll have some wine.
Maybe. I don't know if it'll be good wine, but, you know, first years may not be so amazing, mm-hmm. but
well, setting up a little bit.
Low expectations, yeah. but yeah.
Cool. So previously you mentioned how you see money and how you want to achieve a sustainable lifestyle here. And I want to dive a little bit deeper in it. So it sounds like you don't actively make money right now and you want to make it sustainable. So does it make you feel insecure sometime? For example, can you share, like, do you mostly relying on savings or do you have some passive income investment? How does that work?
Mm. So before I left corporate America and my job there, I did create a good amount of savings just through investment in real estate and saving money. I didn't really spend a lot of money. I invested and then so I had a good savings amount, I guess, coming out of that,
mm-hmm.
you know, but I will say with anyone who's thinking about doing this, so it's never enough, right?
Yeah.
And it will never be enough.
Mm-hmm.
And at some point you have to just decide, cause you're always like, but what if this happens? What if that happens? Or I should have like millions of dollars, mm-hmm. right? Because what if, you know, and you think about your lifestyle at that point. And if you live a very consumeristic lifestyle and you like living mm-hmm. a very consumeristic lifestyle, yeah, you need a lot of money, but if you're wanting to get away from that, you actually don't. So I saved up probably more than I needed to.
Mm-hmm.
And when I left, which is nice to have that cushion, right?
Yeah.
That security blanket.
Mm-hmm.
But right now, and in the past few years, I've maybe made some investments just as the markets rose and fell, but nothing that I stressed out about or spent a whole lot of time on. Mm-hmm. Just use my passive knowledge to make some obvious, I guess, purchases and decisions, and investing in some stocks that had dividends and income, a high mm-hmm. percentage of dividends and income.
Yeah.
And that gives me a little bit of an income stream now, which isn't huge. It's maybe, you know, less than $1,000 a month,
mm-hmm.
but it's nice to have.
Yeah. Thanks for sharing that. Mm-hmm. And you mentioned previously you have saved a lot while you're working. So when you were saving, did you plan a different lifestyle at that time or just a habit you want to save?
It was a bit of a habit. So it was a few things. I had become more and more of a minimalist in my last few years in the U.S.
Yeah.
And so when you become a minimalist, like you aren't really buying a lot of things, right?
Yeah.
So you end up saving, you know, more money. And also the last 4 or 5 years, I had this dream that I wanted to leave it and, you know, and travel and start doing something else. And for that, mm-hmm. I didn't know how much money I would need. So I saved.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. So it sounds like over the past few years in your corporate career, you did start to reevaluate the lifestyle and wanted mm-hmm. to travel. I think I remember you told me you said you never really took a big vacation over the 20 years.
I took some vacations. That might have been another friend.
Yeah.
But I was never like extravagant, right?
Yeah.
So I would take, I think my longest vacation was maybe like 10 days is what I would take. And then it was nice. I would go to a few different places. I did dabble with some volunteer mm-hmm. work in Ecuador. And then I went with some friends to Costa Rica for, you know, a week and a half or something. Mm-hmm. And which was really nice. And I enjoyed it. But the more I enjoyed it, the more I kind of wanted, I was like, okay, this feels like what I want to do. I really like knowing new cultures and mm-hmm. I like, you know, knowing new people and places mm-hmm. And it felt nice. And also when I go to these, went to these places, especially say Costa Rica and Ecuador, I lived a very simple life. Mm-hmm. And I met people who lived a very simple life. Yeah. And you know, you don't, and I realized more and more that I didn't need a lot of things to be happy. And in fact, you know, you're actually happier with less things. Mm. And so that kind of just led me into, was planting the seeds about what I wanted to do eventually. And yeah, but I would say the last 4 or 5 years, I was just feeling it less and less in my role. But ironically, that was when I was achieving more and more success in my role. Yeah. And so I was grateful for it. Mm-hmm. And I also felt a little guilty for wanting to leave it because I'm like, oh, a lot of people would want this.
Right.
And here I am wanting to give it up. Or, mm-hmm. But yeah, it ended up being a really good decision.
Yeah. I remember 1 year, maybe it was the end of 2018, or I don't remember. We were celebrating New Year's Eve, and I remember you had to leave early because in finance, January 1st, you had to work.
Yeah, so I worked for this as a Fortune 75 company in Seattle, but the parent company was German. Mm. And the Germans, so we were their subsidiary, so they wanted all their subsidiary stuff so that they could start working when they got into the office, say on January 2nd or whatever. Or third or whatever, those lazy Germans. No, just kidding. But to do that, we all worked on New Year's Day to get prepare all the financial statements so they could just hit the ground running when they got into the office the day after. But that meant that I never had my last 5 years, 6 years in Seattle, I never had a New Year's Day holiday. So, it's kind of a bummer. You know, on New Year's Eve, you go out and then you're the one who's either you're leaving at, 2 in the morning or whatnot, or 1 or 2 in the morning, or you're just deciding that you're just going to, power through and just pull an all-nighter.
Yeah. Mm. By the way, we're recording this. This is December 31st, 2022. Yeah! And then after this, we're going to go out and celebrate the new year.
New Year's Eve again.
So previously you mentioned the few years before you quit was the time when you had most success in your career, but you also slowly lost passion for your work. So did you feel you have to force yourself to get up, motivate yourself? And because you're a director, you're also leading a team, you have a lot of responsibility. So what was the kind of the mental state around that time for you? Was it difficult to push for more achievement at work?
You know, it wasn't difficult to get out of bed and go into the office, but I would say that I felt more apathetic, maybe not apathetic, but just less attached, almost like you're looking at it from, you're looking at yourself from outside, you know, kind of outside in. But ironically though, I do think that gave me kind of a good perspective, and I think that a perspective that I really developed. So let me just maybe stop and say, can we give you kind of how my career went? I started out, and I, as a lot of accountants do, especially if accountants go in, I didn't go into the big four, big five, public CPA firms in the beginning, but I still worked a ton of hours, and I worked on projects. I worked till 2 in the morning, 3 in the morning, 4 in the morning sometimes. And when we do that, and I think it's not just accounting, it's other industries too. I know people in IT do this a lot. And then it was always it's for the goal, it's for the project, it's for the deadline, right? And I want to, you have this pride in your work that you want to get it done, and you want to get it done well, and you want to, succeed and move up and get promoted, get more money. And so I was, focused on that. And then it seems super important, right? I didn't want to let people down. I wanted to do a good job. And then later in my career, I would say the last several years of my career, I think I had a better perspective on things where I still took pride in my work. I still liked going in. I liked the challenge of what my role was. But I also realized that we weren't saving lives and that it wasn't the most important thing in the world. So to answer your question with that kind of foundation there, I didn't have a hard time getting in. I still found a challenge in it. I liked the people I worked with. Yeah. I worked with a lot of really smart people. Mm-hmm. Who I enjoyed spending time with, but just the meaning of it was a little bit out there for me. But what I did, I think, is I applied that objectiveness. I had a more objective take on things. And mm-hmm. I think it enabled me to be a better manager, a better boss. So where people had, you know, things that came up then when we had a deadline. And, you know, normally I think I would, you know, earlier in my career, I'd be like, oh, we got to get this done. I mean, yeah. The deadline is the deadline. You got to have it. You got to do it. You right. know, you got to achieve it. We don't want to fail. But it was more like, oh, okay. I'm like, you know, your daughter's sick. You know, you need to get home and let your dog out, you know, mm-hmm. whatever. It's like, yeah, there's more important things in life than a deadline. And I think I knew that better in the last years of my career.
Yeah. So when I first met you, I remember the first time or second time I hang out, we did whitewater rafting. So you always seem to be a very adventurous and a fun-loving person. And I also know you're very creative. Actually, I never got to know the professional side of Misty. Mm. So I never connect there's a stereotype of accountant or finance person. I never mm-hmm. connected that with you. And it's probably a misconception a lot of people have for accountants. They're very rigid. They're like a lot of rules. And maybe you can share with us from your perspective, what do accountants do, or what was your life as an accountant?
So what do we do? So I think there's different areas of accounting. So I'll just speak for mine, which I was mainly like, I was in industry for the most part. I was worked for corporations mm-hmm. that and their accounting departments to prepare, to make sure that the financial statements that get mm-hmm. reported to, you know, the street, you know, the stock market and the investors are completely accurate, correct, and all mm-hmm. the reports are, you know, tied up in a nice bow for that. But what everything that goes into getting that there, you have just the preparing of the financial statement, right? So mm-hmm. like the raw data comes in, which, you know, I think data science, you know, so all the data scientists, you know, you'll get to make sure the data is correct or like analyze the data.
We know the data is never perfect.
Yeah, never mm-hmm. perfect. But that comes in and then we apply the accounting rules on it. Mm. There's a lot of accounting rules that the accounting organizations, the FASB, the International Accounting Standards Board and whatnot, have created to make sure that investors can receive an objective and fair financial statements from all the companies. That mm-hmm. they can look at them all on the same level and understand what you're reading and seeing.
Yeah.
And also that they're true and they're not misleading, right? So that's the goal of it. I mean, there's also a bunch of, you know, just a lot of very obscure rules and things. But we apply these rules and we create these financial statements and these reports and mm-hmm. these, it's not just numbers, it's also like disclosure statements mm-hmm. about different events that are happening at a company that rolls into the whole accounting method. But for me personally, towards the end of my career, I was the last several years, I managed a team that was preparing those financial statements and making sure they were accurate and correct. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's like all the data points come in are just millions, especially when you're in a huge, large organization like I was working in. So you want to make sure you're accurate, but then also we had always change. You had like new products being rolled out, new promotions being rolled out consistently. One of the main roles in my gig, right, was to work on cross-functional committees when rolling out new products and new offerings to make sure that I wanted to lend my expertise on it. Mm-hmm. It's like, hey, this is how it's going to be accounted for. If you do, this is going to happen. And if you advertise it this way, if you say you're going to give a free product, nothing's for free. We have to account for that. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, this is an easier way to do it, or this is the harder way to do it. Not to say this is the way, not really to make the decision mm-hmm. myself of what should be done, but just to advise so the organization can make an informed decision on how to roll out a product from an accounting perspective.
Yeah.
And then my colleagues in the marketing, legal, IT realm mm. would also provide their perspectives, and we would work together and come up with a solution and then roll it out and test it in order to make it happen.
Oh, interesting. So it sounds like it's not like you're just checking the numbers and make sure it's correct. You need to work with marketing, sales, and to advise them and collaborate with them. So now I get it when you say you enjoy the people part of your job, and you need to see how to apply the accounting rules to a different business problem. So you have to use some creativity there as well.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I would say this was probably my favorite part of the job, because I did get to work with a lot of really cool, smart people in all areas of the organization. Mm-hmm. And it's not just me advising them, but it's also them advising me, like, okay, I know that, you know, this is a new product we're doing. Mm-hmm. So maybe it's IoT or it's some new technology, some new thing. You know, I'd get in and say, hey, tell me about this. What's it like? What's mm-hmm. it do? Are we giving anything away with it? Are we having, and they would help me understand the actual offering.
Yeah.
So I can understand how to account for it, you know, mm-hmm. and then, you know, advise my leadership and what we were going to do.
Yeah. So in a way, you're also kind of a data scientist, but with mm-hmm. the accounting and finance rules. Yeah.
Data scientist with a calculator.
mm-hmm. So what was some stress you had to deal with in that role?
We had a lot of stress, I would say. Well, one, so the company I worked for, and I would say almost always the companies I worked for were mm-hmm. like this, they changed a lot. They always were always moving, always yeah. creating a new offering, creating something new, mm-hmm. changing things, rolling out a new system. And I think with change comes stress, you know, because you have to keep moving. And sometimes the change came so rapidly that mm-hmm. maybe, and there wasn't enough time to take a break. And it's like, okay. You know, mm. are we, and let's pause, make sure everything, all our I's and T's yeah. are dotted, and then let's I's dotted, T's crossed, and then move on to the next thing. But it was just like a rapidly moving machine
yeah.
that you're running and mm. trying to keep up with. And with accounting, there's risk, right? Because we're dealing with, gosh, millions and billions of dollars, and you don't want to, you know, miss a decimal point or, yeah. you know, that sort of thing, or maybe you didn't understand this new like code that was coming into mm-hmm. the data, and really this code meant something else
right.
and that totally changed, that would change, you know, everything to the tune of millions mm-hmm. of dollars. So there was the stress of making a mistake, right?
Yeah.
Or not catching something and that it could change things or, you know, get the company in trouble.
Yeah. So how was your dealing with the stress? So say when there's some very stressful day or deadline or some concerns with the legal team, what did you do?
You know, personally, I don't get stressed out super easily, but I say that and I said that, but I do think that you internalize it. You know, after it's like for a long time that you're working in a high stress mm-hmm. or a high change environment, how did I deal with it? I tried to keep it in perspective, like especially, you know, just knowing that it wasn't the end of the world, right? Mm-hmm. It's we weren't saving lives, and you know, you have to keep everything in perspective and not stress out enough and also take breaks. But yeah, I don't know. We just worked a lot.
Good point. There's always a different level in a corporate world. Mm. You can always get more, get a promotion, get a raise. When I just started my career, I thought I would be happy when I become a senior data scientist at Amazon. And I worked really hard for it. And after I got a promotion, I was really happy. Oh, I finally got it. And then after a few months, to my surprise, I feel lost. Okay, what's next? Do I go climb the other ladder? I can become a principal data scientist. I can become a manager and then senior manager. And then I started to rethink, okay, what do I really want to do in my life? So for you, I assume in your early career, you also wanted to get promotion, not just purely for the promotion. It's a kind of a proxy metric for your growth. Mm-hmm. So when did you realize chasing the corporate ladder is not sustainable?
I agree. It's reaching out for the next thing. It keeps it interesting, right?
Yeah.
It keeps it challenging. Mm-hmm. And
it feels like you're in a video game.
Yeah, it's like a video. It's totally like a video game, yeah. isn't it? Yeah, you're doing it and you keep moving to the next level and the next thing and achieving mm-hmm. the next little diamond in the sky that you click on or whatnot.
Right.
But I would say that especially after I achieved being a director, and that was always what I wanted. I always thought of like, to be a director. Yeah. That'd be success. Mm-hmm. I'm like, I hope I can get to that, you know? And then I got there and it was like, but I never actually pictured myself past that.
The idea of being a VP never crept into your mind?
I just never pictured myself there. And I remember when I was interviewing for the director position, I remember the HR recruiter, not recruiter, but HR person who was doing one of the parts of the interview. She'd asked me, she's like, okay, so what's next after this?
Yeah.
And so I told her, I'm like, to be honest, I,
you know, she's like VP, you know, whatever, yeah. Senior Director, VP, whatever.
Mm-hmm. CFO.
CFO. I was like, CEO? I don't mm-hmm. know. No, just kidding. But I told her, I was like, you know, to be honest, I want to kind of marinate in the director position for a while, is what mm-hmm. I told them. But what it like really meant was I can't picture myself, yeah. but you rephrase it to be like the right interview response. I just told mm-hmm. him I wanted to marinate in that for a while, and perhaps maybe I would want to try out director positions in other parts of the organization. So if you are part of a big organization, one of the benefits, right, is that there's lots of opportunity, like if you laterally.
Yeah.
So I was thinking that, well, I don't know, maybe I become a director here in accounting and then I maybe move to marketing, move to legal, move to something else, and, you know, make a good impression here. And then mm-hmm. I have, you know, lots of contacts and networks that, you know, yeah. I can reach out to make that mm-hmm. role. And maybe that would be more interesting. So but really, honestly, I didn't picture myself past a director. And then when I got there, I was just like, oh, this is it.
Yeah.
And I couldn't think of any other parts of the organization I really like interested me in doing it and working. And then I think that's when it started feeling a little bit like, okay, mm-hmm. what now? And I started questioning a lot of what we were doing with the video game, of being in that video game,
yeah.
being in the machine. It's a mm-hmm. machine, you know, your condition and your program. We all have from a young age, right?
Yeah.
To always be successful and mm-hmm. to get the next thing and to be promoted is good.
Right.
And you want to keep doing it and you make more money and more money mm-hmm. is better.
Yeah.
And then, but then I just realized that I had all the money I wanted. Mm-hmm. Not that I had a ton, but yeah. I had all that I wanted. Mm-hmm. And the more I got, I wasn't happier.
Yeah.
I wasn't unhappy, but it didn't give me a fulfillment
right.
that I thought I would have with it. If I just thought I had the right condo, you know, mm-hmm. I had the right car, I guess. But then being a minimalist too, it's like, so I sold my car. I, you know, had a small condo in a great place. And yeah, but then you know, what do? You buy a boat? Do you buy
an island?
Buy an island, you know?
Yeah.
At what point are you happy and satisfied? But
right. Yeah. There's always more. And if you believe, you know, more money will make you happier, you'll never be happy. I do agree that it's good to build a career, accumulate some wealth that you feel comfortable. For example, if you want to, say, live in a farm or open a coffee shop or do something you're passionate about, you have the safety net. You might not use it, but it gives you the psychologically safety when you take risks and make decisions. I think we probably both hear the story. If you ask the guy, oh, what do you want to do when you make all the money and retire? And he would say, oh, I want to move to some town and fish and go hiking every day. And people would be like, oh, you can do this already today. You can just move to a small town and go fishing. And people would say it's kind of stupid to make the money and then make the jump, which I think, yes, it sounds like the people who are already doing the fishing, go hiking, whatever, every day is already living the dream life of someone who is working very hard for it. But I think there is a difference. If you just dive into the life without any savings, say, if you're sick or you need to take care of a loved one, you might be worried or stressed. I think the difference is the psychological, and also the safety net provides you more choices, more option when you actually need to tap into that saving. So that's my perspective of it. What do you think?
I agree to some extent. I think it's everyone. I think it's a personal, I think it's different by person, mm. I guess. I've met a lot of people in the last few years that are very comfortable with the insecurity, right?
Mm.
And I find that insecurity breeds creativity.
Yeah.
And can also, perhaps you live a little bit more when you don't have that security blanket. You don't fall, because we have that security blanket, you fall back on it. You use it.
Yeah.
And then maybe instead of building relationships to accomplish goals, you're going to your pocketbook to buy something, you know? And I think I've fallen into that. I think I do that as well because I have it, right?
Mm.
And then I think also it's something to consider. It's never going to feel like enough. I think I mentioned that earlier. I didn't think I had enough, you know, when I left. But now I'm just like, I totally, you know, I mean, who knows what life brings, you know, but the part of the uncertainty is part of living, right? And Yeah, so you'll never feel like you have enough. So if you wait for that, you'll never leave.
Yeah.
And you will work till you're dead. Mm-hmm. Or if you reach that magical, 65-year age or whatever, mm-hmm. Whenever your Social Security kicks mm-hmm. in and your retirement savings, you can start pulling from that. But by that time, you're 65, which is not old, right? It's not, you still have hopefully a good part of your life left, but maybe you have another 20, 30 years left if you're mm-hmm. lucky. But, you gave up 65 of them.
Yeah.
And then, so you have to do a balance, I think. You have to really consider the balance. Mm-hmm. I left when I was 40, which was young comparatively, but, maybe I should have left when I was 30.
Yeah.
Mm. And, how much more fun could I have had and how much more living could I have done had I left earlier? And really, in the perspective like we have, right, because we're from the U.S.
Yeah.
And from, developed countries and we have a lot of money. Like, we don't think we have a lot of money.
Yeah.
But you go and you travel to any other country in the world, mm-hmm. like most other countries in the world.
Yeah.
And you don't need that much. You don't. It's we have a lot of money, therefore we spend a lot of money.
Yeah.
So it's a bit of a cycle. Mm-hmm. So I know. I think I digressed a little bit.
No,
what was the question?
I think this is a great point. You mentioned insecurity breeds creativity, and if you always feel I need more money to be my safety net, maybe like you mentioned, never get out of it. And a lot of people dream of their life, but what's stopping you from having it right now if that's what you want, right? Mm-hmm. Like you mentioned, maybe you could start earlier and use your creativity to have volunteers, have our neighbors help you, and you can share service knowledge. Yeah, I like that. I think there's a lot of things can bring abundance in our life. Mm-hmm. And the
abundance
measurement,
is a good word. I like that.
The measurement is not necessarily money. And then when I think about it, I think it's also from my personal background. Maybe I'm just speaking for myself. I have to say, because I grew up in China, and then we didn't grow up very wealthy. And then I know also wasn't super challenging. I have to say I had a good childhood, but I heard a story from my parents. When they were younger, there were time they have to eat tree leaves and stuff. Mm-hmm. So I think maybe I got that insecurity from my parents. I know I need to save more to have like a relaxed lifestyle. Sometimes that also make me feel guilty if I'm not working hard. Mm. And if you grew up in China, it's very competitive in middle school and college. So I'm used to always like doing some sort of work, even if it's not productive over the weekend. I think it's also the culture or some programming in my mind. I'm still exploring for myself, what is enough for me to take a risk, take a break? Or I think for different people, the ideal path, the ideal lifestyle is different. So for me, I still like the city life, so maybe I will always live there, always have job, have some sort of income. But I think whenever I think about your story, it inspires me to think more creatively. So I think regardless of your background, when you're listening to the podcast, I think maybe just take some time to reflect in your life to think, what works for you. And maybe there isn't a playbook build for everyone. I think the most important thing and also the most difficult thing is to understand yourself. What do you really want? Mm-hmm. What is your, comfort level? And you have to do the different type of experiments. Like you said, you traveled a little bit. So it's actually on paper, it looks like all of a sudden you make this jump. Mm. Actually not. You do your research. You spend time to get to know yourself. So when you made the decision, you don't have to deal with a lot of fear or anxiety.
Yeah. And to your point about growing up and kind of the environments we grew up in, I think also, so I think it's also a little bit generational too. Like, I would say that you're younger than me, mm-hmm. but it's, my parents, for example, they grew up in a very, born in the 40s or 50s. And it was a generation that was very practical, right?
Yeah.
Like, you got to get up, you got to go out, you got to get a business degree. My parents were like, business or nothing, It's like, if you aren't have a business, didn't have a business degree, then, mm-hmm. You're going to be living with us the rest of your life. And so, Yeah, so it's formative, right? Mm-hmm. And then when you grow up, and then it's how we think about things. Yeah. And it takes a while to deprogram ourselves mm-hmm. from that.
Yeah, and a lot of people start to rethink about their life during the pandemic. Mm-hmm. And I think it's great that you had this realization even before that. Mm-hmm. So when you moved here, compared to your previous busy life, you had a team, you had neighbors, you can go out to bars. Did you feel lonely?
No. I wish I was more lonely. I don't wish I was more lonely, but I do have, it seems like my cup runneth over, like my life is super full. Not that it's all amazing stuff, mm-hmm. With everything you have, the good and the bad, but I've been really lucky that I made some really nice friends, and there are friends that are just, a wider spectrum than they used to be, because my life is different, right? My life is less like in a mold, I guess, you might say. Mm-hmm. And so I have friends that I go out with, I have more than I have time to go do, right? Because I also have a lot of stuff that I need to do here at the farm. And just, this is a farm that I bought with money because it was easier instead of doing something more creative, mm-hmm. To my previous point. But it's a farm that was not abandoned, but empty for 10 years before I bought it.
Oh, wow.
And so it's still very much like there's some basic things that need mm-hmm. to be done that are projects, as well as trying to get more productive in the producing my own food and, developing the vision that I have for it. Mm-hmm. But on top of that, I have some really lovely friends that I can go and hang out with. It's not like a big city hangout. It's mm-hmm. not our Seattle, hang where we go, we just walk from our apartments in Seattle mm-hmm. and to meet up wherever, or take the metro. But a lot of the people I've met started out from like a meetup group. Mm. So meetup is a great tool that, I should do like sponsors for this, work away.
Yeah, meetup. If you want to send us some money.
Yeah, we'll endorse you.
Yeah.
But yeah, there's other ways. There's ways to reach out to people, and it's kind of, I think there's a really cool saying, but I can't remember what it is. But it's like, for each person you meet, you have the potential for like a million other encounters.
Yeah, it's a network, a ripple effect,
or like constellation type of thing. So you just can all from the more you reach out and the more you talk to people and the more connections you make, the more you can make. And it's really just you're limited only by your amount of time in your day.
Yeah. And I think for most people who grew up in a city, live in a city, our imagination around the farm is very limited. So when you talk about like a farm, in my mind, is in the middle of nowhere. Actually, there's meetups. You're not that far away from a small town. We just went to like a supermarket yesterday, and you have everything you can have in like a supermarket in the city. So I would say the farm in the modern world is pretty advanced.
I think so. I mean, you're always close to something, especially in Europe, right? Like Europe is pretty crowded in general. Sort of crowded, I guess, but it's...
You've never been to China.
Soon. You said you'd show me around.
Yeah, I would.
Yeah, so, I have a house at the country house or mm-hmm. country farm.
Yeah.
I call it like a Casa de Campo here in Portugal, but which basically means you're not in a city or like a settlement mm-hmm. or like a little village. You live outside that. But still, I'm 3 kilometers to the center of a nice town with cafes and grocery stores and little boutique shops. I can ride my bike there if I want to. I can take the car. But there's always, something to do. And then I'm 30 minutes from the beach, which is nice to do things.
There's a nice restaurant and bar, cafe by the beach. Mm-hmm. So it's still well connected to the town. If you want to go to the city, there's a bus, there's a train that can take you there.
Yeah, this is farming. It's farming these days.
Yeah. And have you wondered what would your life be if you didn't leave the corporate world?
Yeah, gosh, I have like anxiety, like of what ifs, like what if I didn't leave? Yeah, I have no regrets in leaving. Mm-hmm. It's my life is so much fuller and newer and different. It was a really scary decision to take because I didn't know what was out there for me. And it was scary. I didn't know if there was anything, right? And how depressing would that be? It was like, I take this big leap and it's just like, there's nothing there. But yeah. I mean, I could just recommend doing it. I mean, you do it, save the amount of money you feel like you need to be you know, we aren't going to freak out and run back, you know, a week later. But to give yourself enough time to immerse and to like deprogram yourself and to experience a new way of living, if that's something that interests you. It doesn't, you know, a lot of people love what they do and love the city life. And perhaps, you know, their passion is, you know, to go into the office.
Yeah,
every day. And that's great. But if you are dreaming of something else, then I think that I thank myself each day that I took that step to do it.
Yeah. Also, I would add that whatever you're doing in your career, make sure you still do it well. It's also good to have the experience building up your confidence, so you know you have achieved something, and then after you do make a transition into a different lifestyle, you don't need to wonder, oh, what if I did that or this? You know, you have tried your best. And also, if something happens, if you need to go back, you know, with your previous experience and knowledge, you can have a job. But, you know, with the other perspective you provided, sometimes insecurity is not necessarily a bad thing. It provides creativity, or maybe it motivates you to go deeper into the ideal lifestyle you want to. So yeah, make your own judgment. I think we provide kind of different advice here. So looking back in your previous, the past few years, including your career, what are some mistakes you made?
In the last few years, you say?
Mm-hmm.
Gosh, so many, including my career?
Yeah.
I guess that's a whole nother interview.
Yeah.
Daliana. So, gosh, I would say that I think a lot of mistakes I made was just out of insecurity. And but not insecurity that I was an insecure person, but I think but we all have insecurity, right?
Yeah.
Like wanting to find security fast and wanting to do things fast and to get to a safe place fast. Whether it was, you know, accepting a job too quickly, making a decision about my career too quickly.
Right.
And that taking time to think things over and just really decide what feels right. Don't feel rushed to make a decision. I think that feeling rushed to make a decision can do that. I think that probably, if I'll just take it back to the starting point, I probably wouldn't have chosen accounting as a career choice. I would have done something else that was more creative. Or, and to that extent, you know, don't always listen to other people. Like, just because you want something that maybe many other people don't find logical or don't find realistic, you know, make your own path. Follow, you know, blaze your own trail. It's just scary to do, and it's hard to tell people that when they're young, unless you have just, you know, people who just, you know, really nurture that in you growing up.
Oh, so when you started this journey about, you know, moving to Europe as a U.S. resident, or someone who also quit their job, live in a farm, did you find any books or blogs that were helpful?
I didn't. No, I Googled trying to find like someone else who I could use as an example of doing what I did, but maybe they just don't write books or blogs, or maybe I suck at Googling. But yeah, I couldn't find anyone. I could find people that took a year off and, you know, ever came back. And then I could find people who were maybe in their 20s and just kind of free-spirited hippie types, you know, that I didn't have a lot to lose. I couldn't find someone that had achieved, not that I was so successful, but I was, you know, middle management, whatever, you know, director level. So I had achieved that level and left it.
Yeah.
And so it doesn't give you a lot of security, right? You have to kind of embrace that insecurity. That's like what I mean by embracing insecurity. Like, don't doubt it just because you're the first one who's done it. First one. Obviously, people have done it before, I'm sure, but not a lot, right? So I couldn't find anyone who had done it, and I found just kind of, you know, 20-somethings and maybe some people who had been laid off and just took some time off of work to do some traveling. And so that I decided I was just going to try it and see what was on the other side of the door.
Yeah, I can see how kind of a little bit scary that was when you couldn't find anyone with the similar path you want to take. You might wonder, oh, does it mean I'm making a bad decision?
Because I mean, I'm crazy,
right?
Maybe
because you're actively choosing this path, not because you're forced to do it. So maybe at that time you wonder, oh, does it mean I'm giving up my potential, all the opportunities.
Am I being an idiot? Yeah. Yeah, that's yeah. It all went through my head. And yeah, it was super scary. I would say it's the scariest thing I've done in my life. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But it's also the best decision.
Best decision.
Yeah.
Hands down.
And what are some other good decisions you made during this journey that you think other people might want to, you know, copy or consider?
I think traveling, you know, someone told me, I can't remember who, my friend told me, is that traveling is a really good way to find yourself. And I would recommend it. I didn't know where I wanted to land. I had no idea what was on the other side or what I wanted to do. I had no skills, no talents, no hobbies, you know. And I traveled and I just opened myself up to an unknown path. Mm. And then I just let time do its thing, and time and just keeping one foot in front of the other do its thing until it really, my path was more obvious. But, you know, I'm still defining my path in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
I reached a really nice level, I guess. Mm-hmm. That sounds, talking about like it's a game again, but
yeah,
to where I have a new home again. Mm-hmm. Like I'm not a vagabond again anymore. And that feels really good. But I'm still forming that path. It's not a defined path still. So,
yeah. And what are some other advice you have for people who want to explore a lifestyle in the countryside, or, you know, just in general, quit a job, follow their passion?
I would say I'm still very practical when it comes to money, even though I like to reduce it in my life. Mm-hmm. But I would say, you know, pay off your debts if you're in debt. And then other than that, anything else you have is gravy. You don't really have to have hardly anything to set out. And everyone's situation is different, right? People have families and different things. So I'm just kind of speaking from my perspective. Mm. But you don't have to have near as much as you think you do. And then just move out there and do it. Just say, if you have something that interests you, it doesn't have to be your passion necessarily, but just like, hey, I could do this. I kind of like to... Farming, huh? What is that? You know, it sounds kind of cool. You don't have to go buy a farm, you know, and then figure it out that way.
Yeah.
But you can go volunteer at a farm. You could do Workaway. Check out Workaway. It's workaway.info, I think. Mm-hmm. And reach out. It doesn't matter how old you are. Like there's a lot of people who do Workaway or do volunteer or gap years are, you know, 20 years old. Mm. Some are 40. We're 40 like me. And then there's other people in their 60s that are doing that. So don't feel like you need to fit into a stereotype to do it. But don't spend a lot of money. Like, just don't stress yourself out by spending a lot of money. It's like, oh, I want to go, you know, spend 2 weeks at this, you know, farm I saw on Instagram, you know, where I can take photos and really see turtles into the ocean and pay, you know, $2,000 to do that.
Yeah.
Nice if you have it, if you want to do it and that's your vacation or whatnot. Mm-hmm. That's great. But you don't have to. You can do things for absolutely for free and just have, you know, people give you free food and everything and try it out and do it. And it takes the stress off, I think, the pressure off. If you just, don't spend a lot of money doing something until you try it out, right? And even after you try it out, you don't have to spend money.
I think that's a great advice. And you studied accounting, so finance, maybe personal finance seems easier for you. So I guess for other folks who want to consider this route, do you recommend people to look into their finances earlier?
Yes, but in just from a very practical sense, like understand how much you need to live. Mm. And maybe that's the most important thing. Like get comfortable with how much you need to live. And
do an audit of your lifestyle.
Yeah. Like what are you spending money on? Like do you have, and you kind of bleed money in the city, right?
Yeah.
Like $5 cappuccinos were like my day to day. And it was like, you know, also, but I wasn't always rushing and going to this place, and you always spend more money when you do that.
Yeah.
But yeah, I would say don't spend too much time auditing your expenses if you don't think you're going to have the same lifestyle on the other side of the door. And I would also say just get comfortable with what you're going to have coming to you. So what, you know, I just totally nerded out and to myself, I said, okay, how much do I get from Social Security? And when does that start? Mm. How much am I going to get from my 401k if it just stays the exact same money and there's no interest, no growth, which is unlikely, right? But just what I have in there today.
And, yeah.
And you figure out when you are able to start drawing on it. Mm-hmm. And so I found out that I think it's like somewhere between 61 and 65. I can't remember. You get all that stuff. And so like Social Security is about $2,000 a month if you're in American or if you're in the U.S. And then you, your 401k is whatever it is, right? You just divide it out by however. And then you decide how long you're going to live, right? So, and I just always just say 100, right? And so I knew you can get comfortable. Most people can get comfortable that after 60, 65, mm-hmm. you can live. You're not going to starve. And then I just decided, okay, so for the next, you know, years until I get to that age, you know, how much do I need to live on per month? And then that's maybe what I need to have a plan for as kind of your minimum.
Yeah.
And then just take it from there and then decide, you know, really what your income streams are. But there's all sorts of type of work you can do also to make that income stream. If it's not a big one, if you like buying diamonds and horses, then, you know, you probably need a bigger income stream.
Yeah.
Yeah. Then my advice, don't take my advice, take someone else's advice.
So what is your vision about your farm?
You know, I'm still forming it. I bought this place, and I think I mentioned, I'll give you an example. It wasn't a mistake, but I'll give you an example of what a different choice I would have mm-hmm. made had I not had savings, money saved to do it. Mm-hmm. Is maybe I wouldn't have bought a farm, right?
Yeah.
If I didn't have the money. Well, of course, I wouldn't have bought it if I didn't have the money. But there's communities you can join, and you can maybe collaborate with other people and work together on building a living naturally and living sustainably or off-grid. So I think that's an option for people. But along those lines, though, I think that living in a sort of community or living close to other people or neighbors where you share help and stuff, right? Mm-hmm. If you think it just makes life so much easier. So I think potentially in my place at some point, I don't know how I'm going to go about it, but involve other people in it. I would like to do that at some point in the future.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, think about it, it's like, does everyone need, say, I'll use farm examples, does everyone need a tractor? Mm-hmm. You know, no, it's like, you probably, if you have a group of friends in the nearby area, just one person needs a tractor, and then, you know, you share. Or if you want to go out on, say, a trip, you know, your neighbors or your friends, and the other people in, I'll say, your community, can perhaps look after your animals, and so you don't have to, like, pay someone to do that, or you know, stress out trying to find someone. Same thing. Oh gosh, I need to, I have a pile of gravel on my road. You know, you don't have to lure your American friends over to, you know, your friends from the Seattle over to help you do it. Mm-hmm. You potentially, you have a neighbor that, you know, you could just have an agreement that you help each other out. Mm-hmm. So I think that living in community is something that we've gone away from as a society, and I think it's the smartest way to live. Mm-hmm. And I think that I would like to incorporate that somehow, I don't know exactly how, into my place, into this farm.
Yeah, that's a great vision. Mm-hmm. So looking to 2023, what are something specific that you're excited about?
2023, wow. 2023, my parents are coming to visit, which will be the first time and that they'll be coming to visit here, which is really nice. And then I have some projects that I want to work on. I want to work on a rain capture system that goes into my water deposit, which goes into my house. And I'm building out a nicer plant nursery for starting seeds and plants and whatnot.
Yeah.
Yeah, so those are my projects, I guess. But also just developing more, and I would say connecting more with people in the permaculture community here. Mm-hmm. So my farm is a sustainable farm and partially off-grid sustainable, and I nerd out totally on permaculture stuff, and so the more I can make friends and connect with people who are into the same thing, I think that would be super cool.
When I look at the type of work you do, a lot of them seems to be like mechanical engineering. It's kind of technical. Don't underestimate the farm life.
It isn't, you know, one of the first challenges I had to, first puzzles I had when I first moved here was how to get water to the house.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's like, you don't just call the guy, you call the water company and then say, hey, I'd like to connect, I'm pay my deposit, and okay, let's get some water. But the farm had been vacant for 10 years, and I had what I thought was a well. It turned out when it got cleaned, it wasn't a well, it was just a deposit of water. And I've had to figure out how to get the water from my pond in the valley. Well, I had to decide on that being the solution, right? There's yeah. different ways you can solve it, but how to get that 200 meters up to the house
yeah.
and filter it and whatnot so that I could get water to the house. And yeah, if you don't, I mean, I know that sounds kind of easy, but there's physics involved in that. Like, what kind of size pump do you need? Mm-hmm. What, how are you going to get power to the pump? There's like weird water things that you would never mm-hmm. really think you need to know that I learned.
Yeah.
So a lot of different problems than I used to solve.
Yeah. What are some other challenges you faced after you moved here?
The language. So, gosh, you know, I didn't grow up learning a second language. And so I took my 40-year-old brain when I started traveling. And it was just like, okay. Yeah, I started learning Spanish. And because I was like, I'm very practical. I'm like, there's a lot of countries that speak Spanish and a lot of a little more countries I would like to explore, perhaps potentially live in, right? It'll be very useful. So I started learning Spanish. I got to about an intermediate level in Spanish. Yeah. And then then I moved to Portugal. It turned out I didn't end up in a Spanish-speaking country. Mm-hmm. I came to Portugal and it felt like home and I stayed.
Yeah.
And so the language is challenging, but also it's super cool. I would say, and I'll say this, maybe when I finally become fluent in a language, I'm not fluent yet in Portuguese. I'm still at an intermediate level, but it's enough to get by, right?
Yeah.
Just my poor Portuguese friends, they just probably just like, her grammar is terrible, you know, but... Yeah, it's a challenge not to be able to communicate. And it's better now that I can speak it better, speak the language better. But in the beginning, it's kind of lonely when you don't speak the language, right? Charades can only get you so far.
So how do you like the Portuguese culture?
I like it a lot. You know, it felt like home to me when I first arrived. I visited quite a few countries. But when I got to Portugal, it wasn't flashy. It was just like, okay, click. If it's people here tend to be a little bit more authentic, I would say. I tend to be authentic. Not always, but more often than not. And I would give you an example, like in the US.
Yeah.
You were always like, hi, how are you? Hi, how are you? Great, how are you? You know, and which means nothing, you know. It's like we always say that. We always say we're great no matter what, or good no matter what we are. But here... the first few times I said that to someone, they told me their life story. And not their life story, but they told me their physical ailments. I was usually like a 20-minute answer about what was going on. I said, hey, how are you? But I mean, people ask you how you are here. They really want to know how you are.
Yeah.
Which makes total sense. But it's, you know, it's just a more authentic way. I think people are just really saying exactly what's going on versus just... putting a smile on it and building a wall around ourselves, right?
Yeah.
So it's nice to connect with people that way.
When I just moved to the US, that was one of the biggest culture shock. So how are you? Sometimes it's just like a greeting. People will walk past.
They don't even pause to let you answer it.
Are you expecting me to say anything?
Yeah.
And that was funny. Also, I think similar in China, you don't always ask people, hey, how are you doing? But when you ask, people will take it as the actual question. But now, after living in the US for, I guess, 10 years now, and I feel like, I'm adjusting back to this culture where you actually do mean something and expect a right answer when you ask people, how are you? So, I like it.
I like it. It's a good way of being.
And what are some other things you feel you need to unlearn from your previous quote-unquote programming?
What do I need to unlearn? I think just being comfortable being vulnerable and not having to be, you know, like just having all the answers all the time.
Yeah.
I think that, especially in corporate America, I think that we're as a society and also in corporate America, I think that we're always, especially if you're in leadership, you always should have the answer. You always should do the right thing.
Yeah.
Oh, this didn't get the right outcome. What are we going to do different next time? You know?
Yeah.
And it's just to unlearn that a bit and just to like, you know what, you know, we're going to do the best we can, but also we don't have to control everything. And just, learning not to feel like, and I'm in this, on this journey of this, but to relinquish control and to realize you don't have to control everything.
That's also something I feel I need to tap into more, the uncertainty. And before we wrap up, do you have anything else that you want to share with the audience?
I don't think so. I think we covered a lot of ground.
Cool. But
yeah, thank you so much. This has been really fun.
Yeah, thanks for coming to my show. And for people who want to read your stories and follow your journey, where can they find you online?
You know, I started a blog. It's wheresmisty.com. No apostrophe, just wheresmisty.com. So you can check out that. I don't update it very often. I'm not really into social media that much. Or the farm has an Instagram account. Mm. Again, I take breaks from it quite regularly. But if you want to see what's going on at the farm, then it's just the farm with underscores between the word Instagram.
Cool. I'll add those to the show notes. I think it's getting dark now, but tomorrow maybe I will use my phone to do a little vlog and give people a tour to your farm.
I gotta clean it up, all right?
I learned a lot about you, asked a lot of questions. I always in the back of my head, but didn't get to ask. So thank you so much for sharing your story with us, Misty.
Thank you, Daliana. Thank you for letting me talk about myself for a good amount of time. Thanks, everyone.